Awesome. Well, welcome to Hoboken Grace. For those of you who are with us for the first time or for those who are listening online, my name is Chris High. I'm the teaching pastor here at Hoboken Grace, and we are super excited to have you with us as this week we jump into our second week in our No Regrets series. And I don't usually do this, but if you weren't able to be with us last week, I actually highly suggest that you go back and listen to it online. It really is foundational to so much of what we're going to be working through over the next few weeks. Because last week we began and we looked at how God in your life, in my life, your experience, in my experience, is stepping in to be able to lovingly come alongside of us and say, listen, you need to pay attention to the decisions that you're making. Because the decisions that you're making are not only going to determine your direction, the decisions that you're making are going to determine your experience and your destination. And so what you sow will be what you reap. The decisions that you make now are going to determine what you experience and where you end up as you move forward. And not only did he come alongside of us and say, okay, listen, you need to pay attention to that. But as I said last week, as we move throughout this series, I believe he's coming alongside of every single one of us to be able to help us make better decisions so that not only our lives are fuller, but that the lives of the people around us are more full, more abundant as well. And so that's what we're diving into to this week. And there are all sorts of lies that surround this idea of decisions and how we make decisions. We talked about the first one last week, this idea that what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, right? That our decisions are isolated moments, that they don't actually impact the rest of our lives. That we can make one decision here and not feel its effects over here. But the problem is, what happens in Vegas never stays in Vegas. Not just because of the fact that people find out about it, but because of what we talked about last week, that what you sow is what you will reap. It will influence your direction and eventually your destination. You reach out for that bean dip thinking that this is an isolated decision, not thinking about how it's going to influence your friends and family members for hours and hours to come, right? This decision is not an isolated situation. It's going to impact the rest of your journey. And sometimes it's laughable, but sometimes it's really, really serious. The second lie is kind of tied into that, and this has to do with the way in which we make decisions. And so we can believe that for part of our lives we make decisions this way, but then later on when things change or when I find myself in a different circumstance, then I can change the way that I make decisions and make decisions differently over here. The problem with that is that decision-making is actually a habitual process, meaning that the way in which you make decisions or the way that you begin to form how you make decisions in one part of your life, whether you like it or not, will influence the way that you make decisions later on in life. It was interesting. We were sitting around the table with a bunch of dads this week at my dinner group, and one of the dads was talking about what we talked about this past week, talking about the weight of our decisions. He says, man, it's just crazy because now I look at the decisions that I make and I see how they influence not only me, but they influence my wife and now my kids too. There's just so many people impacted by these decisions. I've got to be so much more careful with how I make decisions. And I think there's something inside of us. There's this lie that creeps in that says, you know what, as a single person, I can kind of make decisions that are selfish and make decisions without considering those around me. But then when I have kids, I'll change the way that I think through decisions. I'll change my decision-making process so that I can consider those around me. The problem is, if you begin to do that as a single person where you're making decisions just solely based on you, not considering, even in your situation, your future wife and your future kids, not considering them, that becomes a habitual process that although you may want to change it later, you will find exceptionally difficult to change later. Decision making is a learned process. And so as we walk through this and we see how God is stepping into your life and my life and saying, listen, I want you to make decisions that lead to life. I want you to experience the fullness of what I created you for. Not only does he come in and say, pay attention to decisions, but I believe throughout his word, he's drawing our attention to specific things in order to be able to influence that decision-making process. so that in your life and my life, we can begin to process and think through decisions with certain questions and certain checks in place so that we make decisions consistently that lead to life as opposed to death, that lead to fullness as opposed to destruction. And so this series is not just about, you know, making sure that we're paying attention to our decisions. This series is about developing that process and walking through four questions that I believe God brings into your life and my life to influence that process, so that whether we're making a decision that's stretched out over days and weeks or whether we're making a decision that's just in a moment, we make decisions that we can look back on with confidence as opposed to decisions that we look back on with regret. And sometimes those decisions are huge decisions, right? Today, as you walk in, these pictures around the stage here, they represent those some of those big decisions, right? Who am I going to date? Who am I going to spend my life with? Where am I going to live? Who am I going to work for? What's our family going to look like? What am I going to do for a living? What's my major going to be? Right? Some of these decisions are huge decisions, but then also some of these decisions are really, really small decisions that we just make in an instant. And both have the ability to be able to either bring life or bring death. And I believe if we begin to work through this process that God's calling us to work through, if we begin to make decisions with His truth in mind, influencing that process, then whether it's something that we're thinking through for a long period of time or whether it's something that we're just doing almost subconsciously, we will begin to make decisions that bring life not only to ourselves, but to the lives of the people around us. And so that's what we're going to begin to work through today as we dive into question number one. And for some of you, you're like, okay, finally. I mean, come on, Chris. You have drugged this out as long as you possibly could. You've been telling us about these decisions for weeks and these questions for weeks and weeks. Finally, would you just give me a question? Okay, we're getting there, all right? That's what today's all about. We're going to dive into a passage that's actually found in the book of Jeremiah. But before we do that, I want to give you a little bit of background on it, because if you don't understand the situation in which this passage is written, you won't understand the fullness of what it's intended to mean in your life and my life. It's written by a man named Jeremiah, who finds himself as a prophet during the lives of several different kings. Now, these kings are pretty much idiots. Okay? Like, if you just go into it with that understanding, you'll understand it much, much better. They're just basically idiots. And this one king, his name is Jehoiakim. His son's name is Jehoiachin. So if I get confused, please bear with me. It's like one of the worst mistakes that you can make. As you're preparing to have a family, for those of you who are, do not name anyone in your family, anyone near, anyone else's name. It's just awful. I named my sons Caden and Kale. They both start with CA, which means I'm never going to call them the right name for the rest of their lives. Okay? Some of you experienced that growing up. You'd think we'd learn from those who come before us. No, we just keep making the same mistake. And so the one king, his name is Jehoiakim. Now, as he's king, there's another king in another place called Babylon, right? Jehoiakim is the king of the nation of Israel, and there's another king who's called Nebuchadnezzar, and he's the king of Babylon. Now, Babylon is the empire. Right? Many of you have heard of Babylon, not necessarily from the Bible, but just from history, knowing about the huge size of this empire. And so Nebuchadnezzar is conquering all of the world, including Jehoiakim. And so he comes in, wipes out Jehoiakim, and Jehoiakim's son, Jehoiachin, steps in, and he's kind of the king, but in this situation, you're kind of king, you're kind of not. Right? I mean, they allow you to be king as long as you allow them to take whatever they want, whenever they want. Okay? And you just kind of serve underneath them. You make sure that you send the taxes off to Babylon, and then there's not going to be any trouble. You'll be good to go. Now, Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon have basically conquered the known world at this point. They're huge, unstoppable. And so Jehoiachin comes in, and he decides that he's going to lead a rebellion against Babylon. Right? Now, I don't have to tell you the rest of the story. You already know how the story is going to play out, right? This isn't going to end well for him, but he decides that he's going to do it anyway. I don't know if he's surrounded himself with a bunch of people who are just telling him things that he wants to hear or what, but somehow he convinces himself that he's going to be able to defeat Nebuchadnezzar, that he's going to be able to lead this rebellion, and that he's going to be able to take over as rightful king. He decides to do this. Guess what happens? He fails. It's a complete disaster. As a matter of fact, not only does Nebuchadnezzar conquer them again, but he actually comes to Israel in order to establish the fact in person that this is my domain. Do not mess with me. And then on top of that, he takes Jehoiachin out of power and replaces him with a guy named Zedekiah. And so Zedekiah, again, is king, but basically he's just a puppet. Right? You're just supposed to do what Nebuchadnezzar tells him to do. He's just supposed to do what Babylon tells him to do, and everything will be fine. Now, these guys are idiots, because not only are they not following God, these kings, but over and over again, somehow they seem to convince themselves that they're all powerful and that they can do something with their position. And so Zedekiah, learning from those who've come before him, decides that he's going to lead a rebellion against Babylon. Okay, I mean, we're talking about real geniuses here. And so he does, and guess what happens? He fails. I mean, it's just a disaster. Along this time, right, or through this time, Jeremiah is the prophet to the nation of Israel. Now, if you ever have a bad day at work, right, or if you're struggling for a time, you just really don't enjoy your job, go read about Jeremiah. You'll feel much better. Okay, Jeremiah's job was awful. Like, you couldn't possibly imagine a worse job. God comes to Jeremiah and says, listen, Jeremiah, this is what I want you to do. You're going to spend your life telling kings that they're idiots, right? And telling them that they're going to fail. And Jeremiah, here's the thing. You're never going to be successful. They're never going to listen to you. All right? So go. Right? How would you like that? First day on the job, God, like your boss comes to you and says, listen, I just want you to know you're going to fail all of your life. Enjoy your position. That's literally what Jeremiah's life is like. You're going to communicate this message over and over and over again to these people. None of them are going to listen to you, but I want you to be my voice, letting them know what I'm doing and who I am and what I'm about. And so Jeremiah gets to go to all these kings and say, listen, don't do it. Don't go. Don't fight this guy. You're not going to win. You're going to lose. God's not on your side. And over and over again, he watches these kings go. And it's kind of laughable when you look at it and we joke around about it, right? I mean, how stupid could you be? But for Jeremiah, it wasn't funny at all, because every single time this happened, he just watched his people get slaughtered. And just watch literally thousands and thousands upon thousands of people just get slaughtered, because these kings start to get full of themselves and they make these decisions that even if you didn't believe in God, I mean, common sense alone would tell you, you're not going to win. And it's not like God was coming along saying, I'm for you. Jeremiah is coming along and saying, listen, God's telling you, he's not for you. You're not going to win. And they just keep doing it. And they do it over and over and over and over again. And in the midst of this, as Jeremiah is writing about what's happening and writing about the decisions that they're making and how they're walking away from God and what God has to say to them, he writes this passage. And I want to share it with you today, because I think if we don't get this, if you don't get this, if I don't get this, if we don't understand this truth, we'll miss the first question, and it could derail us more than anything else that we're going to talk about in this series. It's found in Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 9. It says this. It says, the human heart is the most deceitful of all things and desperately wicked. Who really knows how bad it is? Let me read it one more time. The human heart is the most deceitful of all things and desperately wicked. Who really knows how bad it is? In the midst of all this, as Jeremiah is watching these kings make bad decision after bad decision after bad decision, make decisions that don't even make sense to anyone around them, he writes this verse because he wants you to know, and I believe God wants us to know, this key truth that there is no one on the planet who has the ability to lie to you better than you. That there is no one alive who has the ability to deceive you better than you. And he uses this word deceit on purpose, I believe. There's a big difference between dishonest and deceit. Right? Being dishonest just means that you're not telling the truth. But dishonest people aren't necessarily dangerous because you just learn that they lie all the time, so no one trusts them. Deceitful people are exceptionally dangerous because deceit is not just being dishonest. It's being dishonest in a way where you actually convince the person to believe it. And it's not just that your heart, that you have the ability to be dishonest with yourself, but you have the ability to be able to actually sell yourself on something that is completely false. And no one can do it better than you. I'll bet if we were to go around this room and we were to talk about stories of regret, we were to look back on certain decisions that we make, I bet almost every single one of us could tell a story, looking back, of something that we did, that we look back on it and we're like, how did I even think that? How could I have possibly believed that? You look back on that relationship and you're like, how did I convince myself that he was the right person for me? How did I convince myself that it was going to change? How did I convince myself that I wasn't going to get caught? How did I convince myself that this was going to be okay? And you look back on it and you're like, even common sense would have been able to help me out in that situation, let alone what God's told me. I mean, even common sense would have led me to make a better decision. How did I believe that? It's exactly what Jeremiah is trying to help us understand. You have the ability to lie to yourself in powerful, powerful ways. And so you're sitting there sorting through your closet and you're like, how did I convince myself to buy 6 Snuggies? I mean, seriously, how would I? Someone's asking what a Snuggie is, right? Like, what is that? It is. I can't even describe it. Look it up. Look it up when you get home. You'll see. It's just utterly ridiculous. But we make these decisions and we look back and we're like, oh my goodness. And the people around you are like, yeah, dude, we were telling you that the whole time. Right? Because it's usually you're not all that good at deceiving the people around you. You're just really good at deceiving yourself. And so everyone around you is like, stop. What are you doing? You're like you've lost your mind. And you're like, no, this is cool. I'm going to be fine. And they're like, no, everyone who goes down this path, it's just destruction. And you're like, no. And this is one of the lies that comes in decisions, right? No, I'm the exception. Right? I mean, this had to be what Zedekiah said. I know it's happened to every king before me, but I'm Zedekiah. It's not going to happen to me. Yes, it is. But you have the ability to lie to yourself better than anyone else. And so we talk ourselves into thinking things and doing things that as we look back, we can't even figure out. And we end up making decisions that, man, if I could just go back there, it would be so much better. And that's why our first question today, as we walk through this and as we begin to set up this process of how we process decisions and make decisions, is this simple question. Why am I really doing this? Why do I really want to make this decision? Because in your life and my life, if you're anything like me, I like to believe that I'm on a quest for truth. I like to believe that I want to make the right decision, that I just want to do the right thing. But the problem is, and I think we all experience it, that we really, really easily get sucked into this quest for happiness. And so we get sucked into this life where, you know, I just want to feel good. I just want to do something that's going to make me feel good. I just want to be happy right now. But being happy right now, as you look at what God says, as you look at the lives that we've lived, I think we've proven to ourselves being happy right now is often at odds with being happy in the future. And making that decision to just live for right now is often at odds with what will bring joy and life to myself and those around me in the future. But we get enamored by something and we see something and we're like, man, if I could just have that, I'd be happy. If I could just, maybe it's success. Man, if I could just be that successful, I'd be happy. And so we send this message to our heart and to our brain to be able to come up with some reason why we should compromise to be able to get that position. Or we see that person and we're like, man, this relationship, man, it's going to make me happy. And so we see all these red flags, but we send this message to our heart and to our head to be able to come up with some reason to explain them away, to be able to lie to ourselves so that we can just be happy. And in the process, we end up destroying our lives. And so the question that I want to bring to you today as we begin this series is simply this. Why am I really doing this? Why am I really in the job that I'm in? When you look at the decision that you have to make this afternoon or this week, these decisions before you, why are you really inclined to go that direction? You see, if you're going to begin to make decisions that lead to life, you have got to be willing to be honest, not first with the people around you. You have got to learn to be honest with you. You have got to stop lying to yourself. And for some of us, as we sit here today, we're in the midst of decisions that we've been lying to ourselves about for a long time. And you've been brushing off the people around you who are like, no, that's not going to work out. That's not going to be good. And you just keep lying to yourself and lying to yourself and lying to yourself. It's going to get better. I'm going to get over it. I'm going to be able to beat this on my own. All these lies that just keep coming in. And the only person who's being deceived is you. Why are you really doing this? And one of the things that I've found is that when you begin to be honest with yourself, it is unbelievably liberating. When you begin, and I'm not even, again, I'm not talking about with the people around you. When you begin to be honest with yourself, it is unbelievably freeing. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to make all the right decisions, but at least you stop lying to yourself about why you're making the bad ones. At least you stop lying to yourself about where you actually are. Last week, as we began this conversation, I shared with you one of my great regrets as I look back on life, and I shared about my struggle with pornography and how I wish I could go back to that first moment and just that it would never have happened, that I would never have been in the midst of that battle. And let me tell you something. The question that we're talking about today was one of the most freeing questions that I asked myself in the midst of that struggle. Okay, Chris, why do you continue to make this decision? Why are you doing this really? I began to dive into my insecurities. And let's be honest about this. This is not an easy question to ask, okay? I understand that. As we're having this conversation, I understand from personal experience that this is not an easy question to ask, because sometimes it cuts to the very heart of who we are. And sometimes you realize, you know what? I'm not in this relationship because I think it's going to get better. I'm in this relationship because I'm terrified of being alone. I'm not in this relationship, or I'm not in this job because I think it's what's best for me. It's because I just don't know what else I would do. And I just don't know if I could actually trust God to take care of me. I mean, let's be honest. This question is not an easy question to ask, because it cuts to the heart of who we are. But let me tell you something today. I promise you one thing. The pain of continually lying to yourself and the decisions that you make is going to be greater than the pain of asking this question. I promise you. And I base that on what we saw in God's Word last week, that what you sow is what you reap. And if you continue to lie to yourself about the decisions you're making, you are going to continue to sow decisions that are going to bring about destruction. And that's not what God wants for you. That's not why you're here. That's not why God created you. And so as we begin this conversation, and as we look at this first question, I want to challenge you in the decisions that you're in the midst of, in the decisions that you have before you, to begin to ask this question: why am I really doing this? And this isn't about feeling bad about the past decisions, because every time we have this conversation, I know that there are so many people who are going to go out and they're just like, I don't want to ask that question because it's just going to make me feel about the bad about the bad decisions. Why do you want me to do that? That's not what it's about. Jesus Christ paid for all that. It's done. It's finished. He has the ability to be able to take you from where you are to somewhere beautiful, even though you screwed up getting to where you are, right? He has the ability to be able to bring you back to something that's beautiful. And he's not asking you to ask this question so you feel bad. That's all been paid for. He's asking you to ask this question so that you can make the most of the time before you. He's asking you to ask this question so that you can love your wife better, so that you can love your husband better, so that you can love your friends better, so that you can be a better coworker, so that our city can see who he is. This isn't about what's behind. This is about making the most of what's in front of us. I'm walking into every decision and saying, you know what? I'm done making decisions that I'm going to look back on and regret. And I'm going to begin to make decisions that lead to life, believing that God can lead me there. So you begin to ask yourself this question: why am I really doing this? And you begin to strip away the lies that we can so easily convince ourselves of, so that we can make decisions that lead to life, not only for us, but for everyone around us. The real reason I won't call my kids is... the real reason that I'm buying this is... the real reason that I'm taking this job, or that I took this job, is... the real reason I'm moving is... the real reason that I filed for divorce is... the real reason that we moved in together is... the real reason that I drink so much is... the real reason that I quit going to church is... stop lying to yourself.
and allow God, the one who loves you more than you could possibly imagine, to lead you into a life where you begin to make decisions that you look back on with confidence. A life with no regrets. Will you pray with me? Father, today as we walk through this and we look at this question of why I'm really doing this, Father, I pray for every single person here that they would be able to not only see the reality of this passage, to not only see the reality that we so often and so easily deceive ourselves, but I pray that as they begin to walk into the decisions that they have in front of them, or maybe as they evaluate the decisions that they've made in the past, Father, I pray that they would begin to take this question, I pray that they would take this passage and that they would just allow it to be able to infiltrate those situations. That they would seek truth above everything else. That they would just be honest with themselves and with you about what's happening and where they are. And Father, I pray that as they walk through that and as they begin to ask this question, that they would begin to see the truth of where you want to lead them, of where you want to take them. And that as a result, for every single one of us, that we would begin to make decisions that lead to life. That we would stop lying to ourselves and we would start experiencing the fullness of what you have in store for us. Father, I thank you for who you are, and I thank you for how you love us. In Jesus' name, amen.